about this later. Right now, it's hero time. Or anti-hero time. There was a guy named Jonah, not too different from you or me. He worked at Gizmonic Institute, just another mug in the yellow jumpsuit. A distress call came in for him at 2:30. That's when an evil woman trapped him on the dark side of the moon. Welcome to the Emerald City Video Podcast. I'm your host, Russ Burlingame. With me, as well, almost always, is Zachary Roberts.
Hello.
Nobody can see us. Zach waved, but
oh, no one can see us, and I have my good friend Tom sitting next to me.
I'll publish this on the day that the show goes live. But because they've been so weird about like every minor spoiler, I really didn't want to put it out on YouTube without any kind of warning.
Yeah.
But I do see that thematically appropriate to this episode, he's missing that arm.
I thought his head was broken off from the last time, because he's been in a box since like 5 years ago, maybe more. Because I literally did not want this stuff to happen. And I pull it out of the box and then his arm just falls off and I'm like, ah, crap.
But it's that arm that was off for.
I know that. I actually remember watching it now, and I pulled it out, and I'm like, "Oh, that's actually appropriate now."
but So what we're going to talk about tonight, and probably fairly briefly, but you know, we'll see, is Mystery Science Theater 3000 Experiment 1101 Reptilicus. This is the first new episode of Mystery Science Theater 3000 since 1999. And it exists in no small part because fans kickstarted about $6 million to get 14 episodes made, along with the money that was thrown in by Best Brains and Shout Factory. And then eventually Netflix bought the streaming rights. So presumably they've probably made most of the investment of the non-Kickstarter people back by now.
Yeah. I would hope, at least.
Yeah. But so, Zach, what did you think?
Well, let's just, you know, we can deal with the, at least for me, I believe it's for you a little bit too, we can deal with the 800-pound gorilla. My big problem that I originally was like, oh, I was so excited about it, and then the moment they made the big announcement that they were so excited about that Patton Oswalt was going to be involved, and I'm like, yeah. He's one of those guys that, you can Google search on some of his inappropriate, ridiculous, horrible comments that he's made on Twitter. You can do that. But in general, he's always been a person that I just can't fucking stand. And originally, I didn't have a hell of a lot of justification for it other than watching one of his early Comedy Central comedy shows and or stand-up routines, and he stole like a whole shit ton of stuff from Bill Hicks, who he was friends with supposedly, even though I have a hard time still believing that at all, because they're just so different. But anyway, so that was a problem. Everything else about the show, even I was disappointed that not a lot of the original voices came back, and not since I'm kind of friends with TV's Frank, I was disappointed that TV's Frank didn't come back, especially considering TV's Frank was replaced with Patton fucking Oswalt. But it grew on me in an hour and a half, for the first episode, it slowly grew on me. If it was on a different service, I'm not quite sure I'd pay, per episode, but since it's on Netflix, I'll probably work my way through it. That's my like concise summary. Yeah.
I mean, I think, and again, I feel kind of the same way. I'm not quite as strenuous in my dislike for Patton Oswalt as you are, but he's just never done anything for me. He was one of the elements of the first season of Marvel's Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., which a lot of people, it was a show that started out pretty weak. And I had a lot of people telling me, oh, man, it's so good around episode, like, I can't remember if it was a 13-episode season or a 24-episode season. But, like, with, like, 4 episodes left, people started being like, oh, my God, once Captain America the Winter Soldier happened and S.H.I.E.L.D. collapsed, and it turned out that most of them were Nazis. Everybody was like, oh my God, it's so good now. And I watched like a couple of episodes and it wasn't good. Yeah. And, there was just way, there was a whole lot of Patton Oswalt making jokes about lariats. And it just, I didn't need that in my life.
Yeah.
But anyhow, he was one of the things on that show that I was told, no, you're going to love him. And I'm just like, I kind of doubt that actually.
Yeah.
But, but yeah, Patton notwithstanding, and he's a weird, you know, it's always weird to dislike somebody that all the conservative trolls on Twitter hate.
Yeah.
Because it's just like, no, I don't really want to give them any kind of credence at all, but I don't like him.
But I mean, the problem, and I don't want to spend that much time on him.
Yeah.
Because I don't think, also, one of the great things about this, and one of the reasons why it grew on me, is that he's barely in at least the first episode. For me, it, in this one thing, I mean, he ruined Blade 3 for me. He blew it. Like, he's the, oh my God, who's the person that I used to, Queen Latifah. He's like kind of a Queen Latifah factor. I used to have this whole thing. It's like, well, she's the person that ruins careers and ruins films. Like, she was attached to so many different people whose career, like, literally just went on a 45-degree slope. Right after they did, including Steve Martin, which I didn't think was possible, but anyway,
I hated that movie. I
don't even think Steve Martin or Queen Latifah liked it, or the writers or the directors or anybody else, because it's difficult to even find it these days. But for me, it's the fact that, like, beyond knowing TV's Frank and being able to work with him for Lady Parts Justice, I'll give a little plug to Liz Winstead's group here. So he's a very cool guy, very funny, like, naturally. And the fact that he's one of the main guys, I just felt like it gave something. He's one of the people that kind of gave the show, especially since it was after one of the reboots, or not one of the reboots, but whatever, one of the changes. Appeared, he was an original cast member, but he worked so quickly and so well into everything, and kind of gave everything a little bit of emotion. I don't know about emotion, but a little bit of life that I think it needed, because I think the professor needed, or the doctor, I'm sorry, well, I'm blanking on.
Dr. Forrester.
Doctor, that gave like a bouncing card that you needed. And yeah, I really dig Felicia in general. I was
it'll be interesting to see. Yeah. It'll be interesting to see how those two work. Cause like leaving aside, any criticism of Patton, this feels a lot more like Burns and Smithers than I remember Clayton Forrester and TV's Frank feeling.
Yeah.
Like, I kind of remember TV's Frank having an almost kind of seditious undertone where he would take all that abuse, but then he would have something to say that Dr. Forrester would miss.
Yeah.
And at least in the season premiere, there's none of that. It's very much just Felicia Day's character, Kinga Forrester.
Yeah.
Just punching down at, Max.
Yeah.
So it'll be interesting to see if they try to recapture the dynamic of the old days, like if eventually Patton's character gets tired of being beaten up on and starts becoming more snarky, or if they're going to go for a new dynamic. Either one could work, honestly. I'm just curious to see which one they'll attempt.
Yeah.
I think that one of the things that really helps this episode is that, and I'm going to assume this is kind of representative of the season, but I think one of the things that really helps it is that everything doesn't feel like a very special episode of MST3K. Yeah. It doesn't feel like MST3K, the movie. They very, very quickly just shift you into the gear of, this is just another episode of the show.
Yeah. And I like that. Yeah.
I think that's the only way this works. You know, I wrote a review for like a non-spoiler review for comicbook.com. And one of the things that I talked about was, this isn't Twin Peaks, you know, nobody wants this show to come back and like change everything and blow everybody away and kind of, you know, yes, they're two like long awaited cult shows that are both making a return within a month of each other. Mm-hmm. But when it comes right down to it, I genuinely don't think anybody wants the MST3K reboot to do too much in terms of making its own stamp on the franchise.
Yeah,
you know, I think that a lot of people are expecting that Twin Peaks, because of the nature of Twin Peaks, where it's very heady and very kind of arty, and like, I think a lot of people are kind of expecting and hoping that the Showtime version of Twin Peaks is going to come in, and that after the first hour and a half or whatever, you're going to be like, what the fuck is going on?
Yeah,
and that, like, if it does that, that's how that show succeeds. If this show did that, I think that it would be a big swing. I mean, granted, you could certainly do a bold reinvention of MST3K and have it work and have everybody be like, holy shit, I didn't know I ever wanted that.
Yeah.
But it's really unlikely that it would have worked.
Also, I feel like that's not something that you're going to do a Kickstarter for, using the name and using everything. I mean, if that happened, I think that there'd be a lot of, cause I mean, like, I made some notes about like the fact that I'm like, there seems to be a couple things, like the opening sequence of the opening part of it. It's like, It was like, we have money, we'll do a big opening thing. And then, you know, and then just little bits of things that I'm like, we have money and we can use the money. Because, I mean, I know that $6 million is like chump change on a TV show, but for Mystery Science Theater, Theater 3000, like, I would bet that that money is like all the money that they ever spent on the show.
Yeah,
for whatever, outside how many seasons there are, you know,
outside of like rights acquisition exactly. Is weirdest, you know. But yeah, it's certainly an interest, like, that's, it's interesting to see. And the other kind of weird thing is that they still very much have the very cheap looking model sets.
Yeah,
and like, because this is the first time the show's ever been shot in HD, all the cheap looking stuff looks so much cheaper because it's being shot in HD. And it's this kind of weird thing where you're just like, you know, I think at the end of the day, your brain's just going to eventually adjust to it. And it's going to look right at home with the old episodes. Yeah. Kind of like when the Simpsons first went HD, and you're just like, huh, the Simpsons looks weird in HD. But you couldn't really put your finger on it. It was just because you'd seen 100 million episodes. Well,
I mean, it's also, I mean, like, it's, you know, the big difference between 4:3 and, you know, and working on 1080, you know, 1080p, or at least, you know, I'm assuming they're not shooting in 4K.
Probably not.
Yeah.
Although, you never know. I mean, but yeah, the, one of the things actually, and you kind of, we danced right past it as we were talking about the thing with, you know, having Felicia and having Patton on the show. This is the first time that, and they actually, they did a, like, a backer exclusive Q&A session this afternoon on YouTube. And they actually talked about this because somebody asked Felicia Day if she would want one of the bad movies that she's been in to be riffed on MST3K.
Yeah.
And I never thought about that. I thought it is a strange thing that suddenly, like, both of the Mads are, like, famous enough and have enough shitty movies under their belt that, you know, like, she was taught, she, whatever it was they asked her about, I can't remember what it was. She was like, you know, that would be fun, but more than that. And she launched into this whole thing about this. They did this movie. I guess she did a movie with Kevin Sorbo years ago. And it was like, it was a Western that was shot in like right outside LA. And apparently the director got fired like 3 days in, and they only had like 3 weeks to shoot before everybody had scheduling problems. So they brought in John Wayne's stunt double to direct the movie. Awesome. And he apparently gave them like one take each for everything. And she said that, like, there was this monologue that she was delivering. Like, she had just been beaten and raped and she was crying and blah, 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 blah. And like, she was in the middle of this monologue and a dog howled. And he was just like, cut, that's it, we're moving on. And it's just like, wait, there's no second cut for that? Okay. So she said, like, she wants that on the show. And I'm just like, yeah, it would absolutely be cool. And I would love, like, you know, the joke that she made was that, like, if they did that, Kinga would have to be like, and who is that lovely girl who's just so very good? But that's a weird thing, because, like, when you think about it, Joel and Mike had never done anything, And the Mads hadn't ever done, like, the everybody from the original MST3K, this was the thing that people knew them for.
Yeah.
And so the idea that, like, oh shit, like, if they riff Magnolia, then Patton Oswalt's in that movie. Then, you know.
Yeah. I like I said, I Blade 3 would be fun as hell.
very much. I'm sure, but I think I own it, that the folks at Riff Tracks, who are, of course, it's not Joel, it's Mike and Trace and some other folks, but people who were involved with MST3K originally, I'm sure that there is a Riff Tracks that you can buy, like an MP3 commentary for Blade 3. There's got to be. And if so, I probably own it, because I own most of their comic book stuff. But so that's just a weird, like, and it's, they have like a self referential joke in the, it's, I thought it was in the first host segment. It's really not. It's in the cold open.
Yeah.
Where Kinga is explaining the experiment to Jonah, and I can't remember what he said. Oh, it's after the invention exchange, or during the invention exchange. And she says something like, the newest MST3K is not about ideas. It's about celebrity and blah, 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 blah. And I'm just like, yeah. And as you're saying this, like, the only two people on camera are Felicia Day and Patton Oswalt. Yeah. And so I'm like, I feel like that had to be just the writers going like, okay, if we're, this is a thing that everybody's going to say, we're going to have to say it on camera to deflect the criticism.
Yeah. Yeah. So I was actually, because I was like, I recognize Jonah, and it actually was just from, I think it was probably just from Mark Maron's TV show, because I was trying to look up his casting thing, and he's one of those guys that's been like on every, Super News,
Jonah and the Bots, he's the big Nerdist guy. Jonah and the Bots are, I mean, they certainly are not unknown in the way that, you know, Joel and the Bots would have been, you know, 25 years ago or whatever.
Yeah.
But at the same time, it's very much not the same thing. Like, Jonah and the Bots are still essentially like they got hired out of an underground comedy club or something.
Yeah.
Compared to, you know, like I said, Felicia and Patton have done major motion pictures that everybody, like, stuff that you could, if there were still video stores, could just go to the video store and pick up.
Yeah.
And so, and again, like, that doesn't really disqualify them in terms of MST3K. It's just, I find it interesting that even after all the shakeups they did over the years and after all that kind of stuff, like, they never really had anybody on the show who was, you know, famous enough that they could have been parodied on the show.
Yeah, no guest stars, no, you know, no special things like that, which I honestly wouldn't be really surprised if they didn't, because, I mean, at this point now they can pull in anybody they probably want, not only budget-wise, but also, like, the show has enough, you know, cult favorite that I'm sure that there's some actor out there that would volunteer in a second. I mean, especially...
Oh, I'm sure. You know. I mean, Will Wheaton was in this episode.
Oh, that's true, yes, yeah.
Will, you know, but again, I mean, when you look at Will Wheaton, Patton Oswalt, and Felicia Day, it's like the Social Justice Three Musketeers on Twitter. So, like, you can kind of just kind of dismiss those three all being in the same scene together because, like, okay, they all know each other. And
yeah, I mean,
they're all in this town, so they probably...
Yeah. I mean, and also, at least it's... everything's very appropriate. They're very geeky. They're in the same exact crowd.
Oh, yeah.
They're known for, like, usually known for some science fiction-y type thing as well.
Yeah.
So it, you know, it makes sense. But...
Yeah, no, I really... And I don't... And again, I don't have a problem with what I see in this actually is they very successfully captured, because like I said, they didn't try to reinvent the wheel. They very successfully kind of captured what I think MST3K would feel like if they had, like, if streaming services had been a thing when it got canceled and it just got picked up by somebody and ran for another 20 years and was basically SNL, you know?
Yeah.
It's like just enough of the original DNA that it absolutely feels like a new episode of the show. But it definitely is updated. It's not like they aren't. It's obviously there's a nostalgia element to this show, but that's not what their currency is. That's not what they're going for.
Yeah.
And so,
I actually one of my notes was it actually kind of really reminds me of the very, very, very early episodes, like back when it was almost on Minnesota, back when it was Minnesota TV, right? Or something.
Yeah,
like that.
Minnesota.
I'm trying to remember what it was. I don't even know how I saw the originals. I honestly, because my aunt was one of those people that was just able to acquire like tapes and stuff like that of esoteric SCTV. Like I grew up on SCTV almost more than Monty Python. But that's the kind of a feeling, which is kind of good, because it feels like they're kind of trying to find out what they're doing. Which for me is promising, because it doesn't feel like, okay, this is what it's going to be. Which is another thing that the show always kind of had this, it evolved within itself, but it evolved. It wasn't like Mad About You. It wasn't about, you know, any of these, you know, the kind of standard sitcom shows that like stayed straight along. The one thing I do wish though, is that they would draw, I know that it's so easy to do it now, but I do wish, and obviously compared to everything else on the planet, even like podcasts and shit like that, the production level is kind of okay. Not amazing, but okay.
Yeah.
I wish they would draw back on that. Like the musical number, like one of the things I loved about the musical numbers of the old one, and in fact, like my aunt actually owns one of the CDs, because we both of us were part of the MST3K fan club way back in the day. Mm-hmm. And I'm sure I have a feeling one of my letters was read at one point or another on the thing back when I was a kid. I wish they would draw back on the production level a little bit, because like part of these songs, like when they did songs, and it was the very rare, they were like, the fact that they were so bad, and the fact that Michael Joel or whoever could barely sing, and it was like you or I trying to sing an improv, like, and that was like kind of the charm of it. And the fact that there's like a back score, which is actually moderately well done, and you know, and like, he's like just the, I'm blanking on, not Baron, I'm sorry, Jonah. Jonah's just too good. The rap thing, like just too good. And I'm like, I need him to screw up. I need him to laugh a little bit in the middle. I need him to realize that there's only like, you know, it's like the thing, like you said before, where it's like, there's only one take. Like that had the always thing with the MST3K. No, it's not that we're doing this live. It's not live. But we really only have the studio for 2 hours.
Yeah.
So we have time, but like, unless you really screw up, like they did a little bit of that with the cutouts. They kept falling over when he did things. But like, I don't know if Jonah is just too good at what he does, but he needs to draw it back a little bit.
I think part of it,
but you know,
that might be part of why they showed him on the drums at the start, like just to establish that he's got a musical thing going on. It didn't bother me that much. I can definitely see the point you're making, but I thought that, like, honestly, I thought that the song itself was funny enough that I kind of like hand waved the you know, but I can definitely see where you're coming from. It's funny actually, because when I interviewed Joel for comicbook.com, like back when the Kickstarter was going on, the last question in our interview, we were talking about his relationship with Jonah, and he's talking about how like, Jonah and I are more collaborators than, like, I'm not really his boss. You know, I had emailed him at one point, we were writing an episode, and I was like, can you sing, or are you willing to sing on TV? And Jonah's response was something along the lines of, dude, I've seen how you sing. We got nothing to worry about.
Nice.
And so it wouldn't surprise me if that's a recurring thing, because, Joel could easily have asked him just because he wanted to do it in the pilot, but it also kind of like, if Joel was talking about that before the show ever started, I feel like maybe the musical element is something they'll revisit, which is fine. I actually, I kind of hope that we get a similar balance to what we got in the pilot, in terms of, we got the invention exchange, we got the letters from the fans. You know, I don't need that much of the Mads. And I think that we're definitely going to get more of them in some episodes than we got in this one. This one, they weren't super present.
Surprised actually how little they were in.
Yeah, and I do know from that Q&A, which is now no longer on YouTube. Like, I was actually, I missed the first piece of it, and so I was like listening to it while I took a walk. Like, just turned on YouTube, put it in my sweatshirt pocket. Mm-hmm. And then when I got home, I like pulled the phone out and it said, this video is no longer available. And so when I like stopped the playback, it stopped, like I couldn't find it again. So, but in that they talked about the fact that there is going to be an arc over the course of the 14 episodes for the Mads, which I guess is good. I mean, one of the things about this is that you do, especially because we've had 20 years of people wanting the show back. Now that you've got it back, I think it's a good idea for them to at least attempt to pretend like, okay, if we only get one season, let's have kind of a story arc for everybody so that way there's some kind of resolution.
Yeah. Yeah.
No, there was no explanation, by the way. There was no explanation for how the bots got back onto the Satellite of Love. Because if you remember at the end of Diabolik,
yeah,
or Diabolik, however, they were living in Mike's trailer.
Yeah. Shit. Didn't they explain it somehow in the opening, or that they were?
I don't think so. Maybe no? Maybe I missed it. But there, the explanation that I can't remember which one of it was. I think it was Baron that said it. But one of the guys who plays the bots gave the explanation that, you know, it's been a long time since they left with Mike, and that at some point they built a stairway to heaven so that they could go get their like music collection and some of their pets and stuff like that. Yeah. And then once they got up to the Satellite of the Love, they were just like, eh, you know, we actually have a lot of space up here. And just decided to stay.
Yeah.
Which I guess makes sense because it's not like the bots are the ones being tortured.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, they were. I mean, it'll be interesting whether, you know, it'll be interesting how we see the, because definitely eventually along on the series, they started having some of the emotional kind of baggage.
Yeah.
That
as soon as I said that, I remembered the, like, it might have been an MST3K, the movie, but I remember some episode where they were being shocked or something. And I just remember Servo's head like filling up with sparks and smoke.
Yes. How do you feel about Crow having arms like so much? Because I don't remember. He occasionally had like something. I don't remember. I mean, I'm completely wrong, but I don't remember him having like usable arms.
There's multiple puppeteers instead of just one puppeteer for each of the two bots this time.
Yeah.
Like it's basically like a Jim Henson style puppet now instead of like what used to be basically a hand puppet.
Yeah.
And so you're absolutely right. Like there's more articulation, especially with Crow, because obviously with Servo, there's a limited amount that you can do since like his arms are like so short and like any attempt to move them would be kind of super visible.
Yeah.
But yeah, it doesn't bother me. I mean, they certainly in the old days, they made Crow do a lot of stuff. And basically, they would just kind of throw the puppet at things and shake it, and like this stuff was done. Yeah. So here, basically, all you're doing that's different is that now you can see the process by which things are being done.
I mean, I guess and again, like for me, that kind of goes to. I mean, and again, this is just one episode. We'll see
how
it goes. Like we can, I'm sure we'll have to try to revisit this in like six episodes or something. Like. Or obviously, once it gets dumped on Netflix, we'll have to you know, do a binge and then
we'll have to do like a full something. But
But I kind of that's like part of the charm of the whole thing that I missed before. I mean, I'm gonna have to go back through and watch some of the old episodes and make again because I'll catch them occasionally.
Yeah.
Like I'll turn them on and then like, you know, because it's a great show one of the great things about that show is the fact that you can be like. Just jump 25 minutes into the show and just go. Or if it's on TV or if it's on whatever, you can just go through or stop watching it and then start watching again. It's not like, not like any of the movies have plots.
I think one of the things about this and kind of it speaks to what you're talking about is that now that MST3K has some money to operate with, you know, from whatever source, you know, because again, I think that the Kickstarter amount only covers like a fraction of what they actually are using.
Yeah.
But now that MST3K has some money to operate with, I kind of feel like they made the conscious decision that they didn't want to slick up the show and they wanted it to continue looking cheap. But yeah. then you have the thing of like people with money who are trying to make something look cheap.
Yeah.
And it's a little bit different than people who are jury rigging whatever they can to make something happen.
Yeah. No, I mean, it's the Scorsese problem. I think all of his films were best when he had like $50 and, you know, had to pull this stuff together and the film is gritty and that was the whole thing. And
yeah.
And now he's putting on movies and, you know, it just all looks too glossy or they have to add a film grain to it. And it's always like,
yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
And I really don't think it hurt MST3K that much. I think it's certainly noticeable and there's a lot of little things that you find to be noticeable throughout the course of it. And most of them eventually go away. You know, the fact that the bots have new voices is jarring at first, especially if you're, you know, if you're like us and you've watched the old ones a million times.
Yeah.
But the guys who are doing the bots do a really good job.
Yeah.
And yeah. ultimately their personalities are still the same. It's just somebody different voicing them.
Mm-hmm.
And so pretty quickly, I think that it just kind of, there's still a consistency of performance, even if it's a different voice. And so for me, at least, it was jarring for the first couple of minutes to hear the bots talking and different voices coming out. But mm-hmm. by the end of the episode, it just wasn't a thought.
Yeah. I mean, it's one of those things where, you know, I trying desperately not to be the guy that, you know, goes, oh, you know, the Batman argument like that we constantly have about, you know, it's like, oh, well, they did it better in the first one or they did it better in this version or this Superman was better. And I got to understand that it's, you know, it's new one, they're doing new actors. I mean, just part of it, it's one of those things where I'm like, I'm kind of disappointed because I don't necessarily know for sure that there's no reason why they couldn't pull everything back together. It's not like a lot of those, well, you know, they can't have the original, you know, they can't have Adam West come back in and do the new Batman because, well, you know, he's 85 years old and, you know, I mean, They could have. I don't know if anyone said no. I mean, I know that
my understanding, and I can't remember where I heard this from, but my understanding was that nobody said no per se, but they all kind of collectively got together before the Kickstarter and said, okay, so what is the best way to make this happen? And that both Joel and the, you know, the people who you don't see on camera, or at least who you don't see reprising major roles. Because my understanding is that some of them are going to have cameos and things.
Yeah.
That by and large, the agreement was we can never recapture what we had before. It's better to go forward with new characters and make sure that it's done well than try to go back in time.
Yeah.
And I haven't heard anybody say that wasn't their decision and that they wanted it in. So it's interesting. It's and over the years, different people have expressed different degrees of willingness / interest to come on board for a reboot anyway. So it's a weird animal. Certainly, I would be very disappointed to find out that there were people who wanted in who were told they couldn't because they wanted to go a new direction.
Yeah.
But that at least so far doesn't seem to be the case. And so I'm kind of willing to go, okay, well, as much as I would have liked to see some people come back, I'm willing to say, okay, well, if everybody was kind of collectively agreed this was the direction to go that was best for the show, then maybe that's what you do.
Yeah.
I think the other interesting thing is that that like doing it this way and kind of acknowledging that there was a history and not trying to reboot or anything.
Yeah.
You certainly open the door for cameos. I mean,
yeah, it'd be great. Yeah.
Especially by Clayton Forrester, because obviously his daughter is the big bad.
Yeah.
And so if Dr. Forrester or TV's Frank were to show up, it would make total sense because their kids are literally the people who are, you know, running the experiment.
That would be actually awesome to have them both come back. But
yeah. I do know that Joel was in, I think it was this episode. Joel apparently has several cameos, and I don't know if he's playing Joel Robinson or if he's just kind of there because, like, again, kind of the recurring thing of, like, look, we have no money, so the writers are going to have cameos. Yeah. I assume Dan Harmon will be in it.
Great.
But he's one of the writers, if you didn't know, Dan Harmon of Community and Rick and Morty fame.
Yeah.
But Joel apparently is the guy, one of the boneheads, who flips the switch and goes, movie in the hole.
So literally one of the boneheads.
Yeah.
They literally are wearing bones on their head, which,
Yeah, it's an odd affect. I'm not sure... Why? I guess the big thing is that rather than what they did, like in the later days of MST3K, after Pearl came in, I remember them having kind of a larger cast of bads.
Yeah, they had a lot of minions. Yeah,
but everybody was always like very visually distinct, and so there were a lot of characters to keep track of.
Yeah,
and it made sense because the show had been around for a while, and so by and large they'd been introduced slowly, like one or two at a time. In this one, you're coming into an experiment that's fully formed where Kinga and Max already have like a boatload of minions. And so rather than have like the dude from the Planet of the Apes and her dad and whoever else, they're just like, screw it. We're going to give them like grunts. You know, there's a bunch of dudes in black suits with like skull face things. Yeah. And Kinga has like a bone motif going on with her clothes and a big bone in her hair.
Yeah.
And a lot of baggy black clothes that are supposed to make sure we don't notice she's pregnant.
Forgot about that. Yeah, true.
Yeah, no,
that actually makes a lot of sense. I forgot. I was like, because that's one thing I was, that's an interesting outfit that she's wearing, because usually, you know, whatever, she wears normal human clothes, but.
Well, and I mean, to be perfectly honest with you, she's like, even when you look at something like Supernatural, like she certainly doesn't dress, you know, quote unquote sexy.
Yeah, I know.
But she's a very slender woman and has never like shied away from wearing things that are like slimming.
Yeah.
And so when you see the like giant, like her lab coat isn't like form fit, like even Clayton Forrester's lab coat had a belt on it.
Yeah.
You know, or at least I remember it having a belt. I just remember it looking like a fairly standard, like it fit him in a very kind of, it was a good cut in spite of the fact that the show was done on the cheap.
Yeah.
And like hers and Max's as well, because to be fair, they gave essentially her and Patton the same outfit, so that way you didn't have to explain, I guess, why Kinga has one that looks different than his. Yeah. But like, yeah, it's very. I wouldn't have thought about it at all, except that somebody pointed it out to me that the reason her wardrobe looks like that is because they were covering up her pregnancy belly.
Yeah,
presumably because you totally don't want to get into the whole thing where. Kinga's pregnant in the first season. You have to explain that and blah, 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 blah. And like,
so they shoot it from, you know, there's no.
Yeah. But then you have a baby on the dark side of the moon. And
although that would be a great, anyway, but
yeah, but Clayton Forrester is a grandpa and that's, you know, but yeah, so I thought the show did kind of exactly what it needed to do to kind of earn the goodwill of the people who paid for it, essentially the Kickstarter backers. You know, it, again, I think it would have been a big mistake to try to make this episode a very special episode.
Yeah.
And so the fact that they basically like you get about 5-10 minutes of them explaining who Jonah is and why he's there.
Yeah.
But once they start, like once you get movie sign, it's just another episode of MST3K.
Yeah.
And it's like, if this were another host and the original bots and whatever, I would basically say, this is a good, not great episode. Like maybe one of my top 25, top 40, but not a top 10.
Yeah.
And that's kind of ideal actually, because I think that if you put out, even if you somehow managed to crack the code and put out like the greatest episode of a Mystery Science Theater 3000 that ever has been made.
Yeah.
Then like, blowing people away in the first outing and having it be like fucking incredible and way better than anybody expected A, would have set an unrealistic standard for future episodes unless they were somehow able to make 14 fucking amazing episodes.
Yeah, which would be difficult because, it always has so much to do with the movie, too. Like,
yeah, exactly.
There are great episodes that have the little, you know, the cutaways that are amazing, and then the movie is just fucking, like, just not funny. You know, yeah. I mean, that's always the problem is that's like if it's either so bad or just kind of like boring.
This one was kind of perfect. Yeah. Not just because it was a terrible movie that had like so much stuff that was easy to make fun of, but also it evoked the early days of Mystery Science Theater 3000 because of course it was a kaiju film.
Yeah.
And in the very early days of MST3K, back before the home video market exploded for like Japanese monster movies and back before anybody knew what Mystery Science Theater was. So people didn't realize that like they were surrendering their rights for a pittance and then getting made fun of.
Yeah.
There were Godzilla movies, like mainstream, like, you know, mainstream, like Toho monster movies that were riffed in the very, very early days of Mystery Science Theater 3000 that like they still aren't available legally on video, as far as I know.
Yeah.
That's actually one at the end of the, at the end of the credits, there's a tag on the end that says, keep circulating the URLs. of course a riff on, keep circulating the tapes, which is what the credits used to say, to essentially encourage people to trade their quasi legal, like tapes they recorded off TV of the old episodes that they couldn't air anymore or they couldn't release anymore.
Yeah. I regret not still having some. I have some from the early days. So
I feel like you could probably torrent the whole thing now. But
I'm sure somebody has compiled everything. Yeah.
Yeah. Or at least the stuff that exists. I actually, if you were a Kickstarter backer at a certain level, I can't remember where, you got like part of your like Kickstarter pledge was I think like 5 or 6 handpicked classic MST3K episodes.
Yeah.
And it was like Santa Claus Conquers the Marsh. Or no, that wasn't one of the originals. It was like Mitchell, Diabolique, and like it was just a handful of key episodes that people thought were good, Manus, the Hands of Fate. And then throughout the last year or whatever, while they've been in production, they've been adding to that. Like every now and again, I'll just get a thing, like an email from BackerKit or VHX or whoever it is that does it. Mm-hmm. And it'll be like Mystery Science Theater 3000 has released a new video. And you'll go and it'll be like, oh, suddenly I have like at Christmas time, I got Santa Claus and Santa Claus Conquers the Martians for free for no reason other than the fact that they were just like, yeah, we're just going to toss that in your account.
Yeah.
They did that at least one other time where they just tossed some random thing in my account. Oh, you know what it was? This was the point of what I was saying. There were 2 or 3 episodes from the very, very early days, like stuff that had never been commercially released before where Joel still had like long hair.
Oh shit.
And yeah. And all the voices were different and like basically none of the puppets moved. And it was like super, super like clearly like public access kind of early days for the show. Yeah. And they apparently had not had a decent, like a clean copy of these for years. And when they like found them, they kept it quiet because it took them forever to like clean it up to be releasable quality.
Yeah.
And so, they just put those in accounts like back in November or December. No, it must have been after Christmas because I vaguely remember it being like that the Christmas was a surprise because like, oh, look, Christmas present. And then the second one was like, wow, they're just giving you a lot of stuff now.
Yeah.
But anyway, yeah, there were early episodes that like haven't been released before that are now being circulated again because MST3K is like – now that they have operating capital, I'm assuming they – it's like people who've gotten a hold of them over the years to say like, oh, I have a decent quality of the tape if you can pay to restore it. And they were just like, we can't because we're not really a thriving enterprise anymore.
Yeah.
But now that they have money, presumably like it's got to be worth it to just clean the things up, especially if you can get the rights on the cheap.
I really hope that we could see if this is successful. I mean, this is one thing is that like the return of the whole fucking thing to Netflix and even some of the episodes that, you know, we haven't seen in ages. Because, I mean, like, that's been one frustrating thing as an MST3K fan, is if you want to see them, you got to pay the... which I guess I understand I understand why it's expensive, but like the unbelievably fucking expensive for DVD box sets of of every season.
Yeah, it's and it still is very much a thing of like, you know, because it's a TV show, but it's movies because it's, you know, and so there's the weird thing of like, you know, they made every kind of commercially of it, like everyone that they have the rights to release is now available on VHX.
Yeah.
But there's still, as far as I think they're still $9.99 a piece. Like it's, there's no like, oh, buy a season for $40 or for $24. It's like, no, it's literally like if you're buying these, it's basically like you're buying the DVDs from, you know, Sam Goody back in the day.
Yeah.
Cause it really, it's like at 10, it's $10 and there's no way of getting that down.
Yeah.
Except for on Monday, Rift Tracks runs some kind of deal, which happened around the same time the Kickstarter happened, and makes me wonder whether like the people who run Rift Tracks, like that their share, their like stake in MST3K is like quasi bought out, and like this is what they, this is how they profit from MST3K now. Instead of profiting from the Netflix deal, they get like special deals on the classic stuff, and they get to sell it cheap on their website.
Yeah.
Which again might just be me overthinking stuff, but like it makes sense. But yeah, I mean, bottom line is, yeah, you're right. We should definitely take a look at this again in the, we should definitely take a look at this again in the longer term when,
once it's been released. And
we once it's been released, which I think probably just because like, and we haven't actually been spoilery at all.
No,
the only thing we've talked about is that I mentioned the title of the show or the thing, the movie, which actually they did kind of like, even though they are still kind of acting like they don't want people to talk about it on Twitter. Like they're encouraging the backers to be quiet so that everybody can enjoy it.
As
fresh as possible. But Reptilicus was actually in the trailer, like the like 45-second trailer that Netflix released 2 weeks ago.
Yeah,
because I remember writing up the story like, holy crap, you know, there's a trailer for MST3K. Also, apparently one of the movies is Reptilicus because that's on the test tube. That's the other, this is kind of this weird thing. Like if you see that trailer and you see them like pull the lever and the green slime stuff comes. At first I thought that was just a Reptilicus thing because in the Kaiju movie in Reptilicus, like Reptilicus spits like this green acid.
Yeah, terribly. Yeah.
Oh my god, that was it was an impressively like this was a movie where a bunch of guys apparently learned how to use green screen and were like, oh, we could make the greatest movie ever, and then just
it was weird. It was weirdly bad because it's clearly they had some level of capabilities and it was just kind of all over the place.
Yeah. But it's just, it's such a weird movie, but anyway, so I thought that green slime thing was like that you saw in the trailer, the test tube full of slime was Reptilicus because that's a part of the movie. Apparently it's not like one of the bumpers, cause they do have commercial bumpers, even though there's no commercials on Netflix.
Yeah.
Just to kind of keep, I think it's just so that like, we still have the same MST3K, like everything is very much the same. Like I said, it really very much just feels like another episode of the show.
Yeah.
But in the commercial bumpers, one of the things that they did was they talked about the liquid movie delivery system or something. And apparently that's like just a thing where like they're like King of Forrester, instead of beaming the movies, is somehow delivering them via liquid.
Interesting.
I don't know. But that's like, so that's going to be a thing in every episode when they flip the switch instead of like, and it kind of makes sense because like in the old days it would be like, you know, push the button, Frank, or flip the switch or whatever it was they were doing. And then it was always just kind of like he pushes the button or flips the switch or does whatever he does to send the movie.
Yeah.
And when he sends him the movie, the shot is just still on like those two.
Yeah.
And then you would cut to movie sign. But there was no real transition.
Yeah, no.
By introducing, even though it's this like silly idea of the liquid delivery system, it gives them a transition. It gives you like 40 seconds of footage that you can put in every episode that's basically just like the bad guys pulling some switches and some cool stuff happens and oh, now there's the movie sign.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
So as kind of weird and random as it is, I kind of get it because I feel like on a basic technical level that it's probably like it makes sense for a transition and it's something you couldn't have done on television.
Yeah. No, it's
well, because there's no value to it. And so it's like 40 seconds of footage that you would have had to like cut something else to fit.
Yeah.
But when you go to Netflix, you don't have to worry about a specific runtime. You just make the show you want to make.
Yeah, which is nice. I mean, it's like podcasting and everything. So
yeah, exactly.
The future, so it does, again, you know, that ends up being one of those things where I'm like, we can do this. So we're doing it. Like, and that,
yeah.
I just worry that they'll get into that more, but you know, again, just based on reviewing the first episode, I'm happy enough.
Yeah. I mean, certainly I don't, again, it's that thing of like, this is a good, not great episode of what is ultimately a great television show.
Yeah.
And so if you can make a good episode of a great television show, 15 years removed with a bunch of people I've never heard of, then you're on the right track for sure.
Yeah.
So, certainly, you know, and sometime we'll have to figure out, like, because it'll come out on Friday, we'll have to figure out how quickly the two of us can realistically get through 13 episodes of TV and try to revisit this, like, in a month or something.
Yeah.
But so far, it's definitely, it's on the right track. And there's really no part of the show that felt like a really weak link to me. There were weird bits of it. And certainly like one of the things we didn't talk about yet that is worth mentioning is that because they've got younger talent, we're more accustomed to like the YouTube approach to things. Everything is very rapid fire.
Yeah.
Like there are times, and actually there's a weird sync thing that happened in Reptilicus where there were a couple of jokes that seemed to happen before the movie called for them. I don't know if you caught this.
Ooh.
Like no, there was there was one joke where it cuts to the clock and it's like midnight and they start singing, "It's a quarter to three, no one in the place." And at first I just thought like, oh, that's because it's a clock, except that like the montage that is happening in Reptilicus, it goes to quarter to three, like 3 seconds after that song starts.
Interesting.
And so I'm just like, is that, did you start early? I can kind of get why if they did, because then when they can play through the whole joke, because like obviously they only have so much time from the movie.
Yeah.
But
I definitely feel that like in the banter and the, you know, again, it like the one, again, the thing that I really liked about MST3K is the just the amateurness of it.
Yeah, you know? Which of course it was all an illusion. Because they rehearsed these things for weeks and they scripted it and blah, 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 blah.
Yeah.
But yeah, that you do definitely like with the rapid fire patter, you definitely lose that feeling that somebody like it almost like you get the CinemaSins quality to this where like some of the jokes just one right after the other, after the other.
Yeah.
And there's nothing really wrong with that. And certainly I think it like Joel has talked about it being a creative decision. He thinks that to appeal to a new generation of viewers and to blah, 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 blah. Like he's basically saying like, okay, this is what has changed in the kind of comedy marketplace since we were on TV. And so this is what we're going to do to stay relevant and to stay, you know, to show that we can.
Yeah.
Because if you do it the old way and then people say, oh, you know, it was really slow. You might not get another chance to do it next season because like it might just show that like your fan base is those people who put up the $6 million and that's it.
Yeah.
You know, doing something that shows that you can evolve and you can update and blah, 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 blah. Like if people don't like the slightly faster pace, they can always throttle that back a little bit, but like, It's better to be, especially in comedy, I think it's better to be a little bit on the obnoxious side than it is to be boring.
Mm-hmm.
And so if so I think that's probably what you're looking at is this idea that like, okay, well, this is the expectation people have of comedy walking in. So let's make sure that we show them that we can match that. And then if we need to throttle back, we can. But, you know, it's definitely – it's an uphill battle if people think you're boring in the first two episodes to then show, you know, the network. No. Yeah. We'll do better in a second season. Yeah. You know? So – because that's the other thing. Joel has made no secret about the fact that he wants this to be an ongoing concern. He wants it to be SNL. Yeah. You know, he wants it to be a comedy staple that exists for years, not just in the form of a bunch of DVDs that people cherish from 20 years ago, but literally as an ongoing concern.
Yeah. Yes.
So, you know, making minor concessions in order to, like, keep the show alive doesn't bother me. Certainly, I mean, you look at, say, the Yahoo season of Community.
Yeah.
And that was a show that, like, it was gone for 10 months or something. And when it came back, they were so much different, so much more different, than, you know, MST3K after 18 years of absence and a total creative change.
Yeah.
Pardon? Yeah, I said, again, Dan Harmon.
But yeah.
Yeah, exactly. But yeah, all in all, a very good thing. I wanted to, because I mean, MST3K is one of those weird things that, you know, at the video store we had, like, I want to say 12 or 15 episodes, or 12 or 15 VHS tapes, which I think had two episodes each on them.
Yeah.
And so we would always, like, this was a thing that definitely was part of the culture at the video store. And at our store, you know, we had a cult section, so we were always kind of like the quasi hipster before hipster was a thing, video store anyway.
Yes, yes.
And so certainly I think that, like, if Emerald City existed right now, we would be having a lot of conversations with people about MST3K and answering a lot of questions about when Netflix might drop that DVD.
Yeah.
which I think will be sooner than most shows, honestly, yeah, just to say that out. Like, yeah, well, and part of it too is that if you donated enough money, which I think was like $85, you get a DRM-free download of the full season.
Nice.
On Friday.
Oh, wow. Nice.
So, yeah, that was the agreement that they made with people before they had a distributor in place, one of the things they said was like, look, man, if you donate at this level, you get a DRM-free copy of however many episodes we produce the day that they come out.
Yeah.
And so you're going to have however many people, probably, I'm just going to ballpark and say like maybe 2,500 who donated at that level or higher, mm-hmm. who are going to have DRM-free, high, like HD copies of every episode in 5 days.
Yeah.
And that means realistically, you can't sit on it for a year and a half like they do House of Cards and Orange is the New Black before you finally decide like, yeah, we're going to make a DVD.
Well, I mean, also there's a culture behind this as opposed to, you know, most things.
Yeah,
I mean,
that's true.
There's how many people, you know, it's like Doctor Who and a couple other shows that like,
yeah.
you know, maybe even The Simpsons, like that still will, nope, I got to have volume. I don't even know what volume this would be. 842 yeah. of this series for my set. So, you know, it's actually yeah, one exactly. of the few box sets that probably actually will do well enough, especially for Shout Factory, you know what I mean? So,
and that's the other weird thing too, is I don't know how Netflix actually, like how they're as lauded as their original material is. I don't know how it does on home video. I mean, obviously the home video market is totally different now than it was pre Netflix, but I see House of Cards DVDs at major retailers all the time.
Yeah.
I have no idea if those sell. I know Orange is the New Black seems to sell at a decent clip. I don't think that they've ever released Arrested Development. I got to be wrong at this point. There's no way they still haven't released that. But yeah.
I mean, it's got to be kind of weird to spend $40 on a DVD one season exactly. when that's 5 months of Netflix or whatever, you know, 4 months of yeah. Netflix. So maybe, I mean, on the other hand, you know what? Having lived in Alaska, where, you know, back when House of Cards was coming out, was paying, that was half of my monthly download was watching a season of House of Cards, and that was that was more than frustrating.
A random aside, actually, just because we were talking about cost benefit of TV. Mm-hmm. Somebody was talking on Facebook about my, like, what is like a guilty pleasure TV show? Something that you enjoy and will watch and rewatch in spite of the fact that objectively, you know, it's not very good.
Yeah.
And I was like digging through my brain. I'm like, I know there's a couple of them. Like most of I'm so like production value is such a big thing to me and always has been. Like,
yeah.
The fact that I like MST3K so much is kind of a minor miracle because, like, the camp, like, I don't really go in for camp very often.
Yeah.
And so I was thinking about, like, what do I like that's kind of shitty? And I gave a couple of, like, sitcom examples that were mostly things that I watched because, like, oh, my God, I love insert actor name here. And then it turned out that, like, hey, I really like this show. I'm going to watch it. And then it got canceled because it was nobody liked it.
Yeah.
Like there was something with Ted Danson where he played a psychiatrist and he had like, it was like a group therapy thing.
I forget what that was.
I can't remember what it's called and it's literally impossible to find. I've tried a bunch of times just to see if it was still any good. And like there is not a version of it that's commercially available. And then even like, when you go like torrent sites, there's like three random episodes. And then the same thing with Matthew Perry post Studio 60 did a couple of sitcoms right in a row that I thought were really kind of funny, but that failed horribly.
Yeah.
One was called Go On, which was about this dude who was like dealing with his wife's death.
Yeah.
And the second one was called Mr. Sunshine, where he ran like a hockey arena.
Okay. Yeah.
And both of those I thought were pretty solid, but like nobody liked them.
Yeah.
But anyway, all of the long story, the fact that the one kind of like hour long drama that I could think of where I was like, oh, you know what? And this was pretty crappy, but at the same time, it was meant to be crappy. Like, cause it was kind of high camp cause it was, it's a primetime soap was Dirty Sexy Money.
Yeah.
I don't know if you remember this show.
Yeah, I do. Yeah.
Peter Krause and, God, Kiefer Sutherland's dad, Donald Sutherland.
Yeah.
Jill Clayburgh was in it, and a bunch of other people who, you know, Natalie Zaya, God, there's like a whole family of girls that like two of the three girls in this family played his daughter at different points in the series. And then there was a third actress who also played her because the daughter was so insignificant to the show. God. Moretz, I think. I think it was Moretz's two. Does she have sisters? Like younger sisters?
I have no idea. I don't know.
Anyway, there was, if not Moretz, one of those other like famous, but no, Fanning. Fanning. It was Elle Fanning was one of them.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
And then there was another, I think there was another Fanning.
God, I forget what the Fannings are.
But anyway, Dirty Sexy Money, like that was the hour long drama that I came up for this list of like guilty pleasure shows. Yeah. If you're anything like me and you like it would fit into like the Twin Peaks kind of almost because Twin Peaks was also like there was a lot of kind of self-aware weirdness that had to do with primetime soaps, in there. But like, it's a movie that, or it's a show that's incredibly well acted, even if like the scripts are just fucking bananas. Absolutely worth checking out. And I found out after, cause like out of curiosity, I'm like, I wonder if that's streaming anywhere. It's not. Yep. However, you could buy the first season digitally for $5 on Amazon, which is like 40 cents an episode.
Yeah.
So, so that's my ringing endorsement for Dirty Sexy Money is go buy it on Amazon because it's $5 and you'll probably enjoy it. And if you don't, it was $5 for like 20 hours of TV. So you did all right.
Or you can buy the physical DVD for $6.44. So
there you go.
Yep.
But and then the second season, you have to really, you got to be a big spender. The second season is $10.
Yeah.
But anyway. All right, Zach. Any closing thoughts before we go to bed for the night? Because
no. It's, I mean, I, like I said, if you're a fan, I was very, you know, I was definitely more skeptical. The Patton Oswalt factor was actually the reason why I didn't donate to the Kickstarter, because I was just so turned off by that. Yeah. But, he's barely in it, which is good. Which is awesome. and hopefully he'll be less in it as it goes forward and the show will definitely get better. I think it's something that'll grow on you, even if you, you know, like me, who are like, I really miss, like, there's no reason why you couldn't have pulled everybody together.
Yeah.
But, it'll grow on you, you know, with a lot of things you got to kind of buck up and realize that you can't have, you know, things of the past. So, but yeah, I don't know. 4 stars out of 5. I know we usually don't do review, you know, numbers. Or
no, but, it's, bad, but we probably should at some point. But
well,
yeah.
now on Netflix, it's just, you know, thumbs up and thumbs down, which I dislike a lot. But
yes, so do I.
Everything is fucking going, I guess. So because
yeah, anyway. Because everything wants to be Rotten Tomatoes, apparently.
Everything wants to be YouTube or Reddit or whatever, you know. So anyway, but God forbid,
whole other conversation.
Anyway, yeah, yep. So.
All right, Zachary, why don't you tell people where they can find you? Because you do other things besides this.
ZDRoberts.com. You can find my photojournalism portfolio. ZDRoberts.podbean.com. You can find my political podcast called Insurgency USA. Got an episode going up tomorrow. I'm sure there's other. Oh, Around the Lens. I also do a photojournalism podcast because I guess this is what my life has become. called Around the Lens, and you can find it at aroundthelens.com.
And for me, I write at comicbook.com every day. Every day. Doesn't matter. You can find me at ArchieDigestPodcast.com for Archie Digest, a Riverdale podcast, which is a podcast about a story about a town.